portion of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, my name is Maureen McDonald from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the April 2019 Walter Magazine. We begin with how a community works together to help families in need make a house a home, with Behind the Green Chair Project by Hampton's William Hoffer. Tiffany Lyons spent last Christmas in a small hotel room with her four young children. There was nowhere to cook a meal or set up a Christmas tree. The family was fleeing crisis, waiting for an affordable apartment. Luckily, one soon became available, but Lyons didn't have any belongings. The apartment was empty when they moved in. Bare floors and walls, a shelter, but not a home. That's when a social worker from her son's elementary school referred her to the Green Chair Project, the only full furnishings provider in Wake County for families in need. Green Chair offers everything from sofas to spoons, and they do it through a curated shopping experience where clients pay a small fee to shop for all of the items they need to fill a household. It's a hand up rather than a hand out. When Lyons arrived at Green Chair, she was floored by the fact that she had options. "When you hit that front door, all you see is smiles," she says. "I was testing chairs to see how comfortable they were, and they just kept on saying, 'Take your time.' They didn't rush me." Lyons picked out tables, dressers, pots, linens, throw pillows, and even decorative candles. "My kids had never had beds before, so when they got home that day and saw those beds, that moment, that was our Christmas." Jackie Craig, co-founder and CEO, started the Green Chair Project 8 years ago when she realized that Raleigh lacked a conduit between those who have stuff and those who need it. She and fellow co-founder Beth Smoot began collecting gently used household items and storing them in a closet at their church for redistribution. Today, more than 12,000 people have donated to Green Chair. The organization thrives on a massive community effort fueled by donations and volunteers. This year, Green Chair will serve its 10,000th client, giving families emerging from homelessness, crisis, or disaster a chance to walk through their front doors and be home for good. In May, the Green Chair Project itself will have a new home when they reveal an extensive expansion and renovation of their building that will enable them to meet the high demand from their referral partners, the more than 60 organizations like Interact, the Hope Center, and Healing Transitions that send clients their way. 15 families a week come to the Green Chair Project to shop. That's 15 entire households of dining tables, couches, kitchenware, and more, to be filled every single week. A buy-in rate for shopping is determined based on need, but the average client pays around $200 and leaves with around $3,000 in value. The inventory at Green Chair is fluid. It often goes fast, and they always need more. The company is green in both name and philosophy, as some 1,300 tons of materials have been diverted from landfills, finding new purpose in new homes. And it's a project, because the Green Chair Project doesn't make its own furniture. The community comes together to allow this program to work. Thanks to one of Green Chair's partners, Families Together, a nonprofit that finds temporary shelter for homeless families with children in Wake and surrounding counties, one Raleigh mother and her child found an affordable place to live after they had lost their apartment due to a rent increase. They were eating their meals on the floor of their new home, taking turns sitting in the only chair they had. The mother had searched flea markets and thrift stores to find furniture to accommodate her child, who has special needs, requiring certain types of furniture pieces and fabrics. At GreenShare, she was able to hand-select pieces from a wide variety of options, and there was no moving fee to get them to her. She and her child now eat meals at a table, now sit together on a sofa to read or watch TV. For clients that have lost their housing and most of their belongings, getting a new start with furniture, linens, appliances, and the like from the GreenShare project makes all the difference, says Lisa Rao, executive director at Families Together. At the core of everything the organization does is dignity. GreenShare doesn't just say, "Here's your free couch." They enable a person to choose. Every day I get to see families select items that have been gently loved by people in our community. Knowing what colors you like and what you're drawn to, or what feels comfortable, there's no socioeconomic threshold on that, says Liz McLean, Community Engagement Coordinator at GreenShare. Johnny Thomas's apartment in Raleigh is a source of refuge, a place that is full because of the GreenShare project. Being homeless is a trauma, he says. Seeking help is another trauma. And receiving that help can be the most traumatic of all. But GreenShare didn't make me feel like a beggar or a bother. They allowed me to keep my dignity intact. He says that the generosity of the GreenShare project changed his life, inspiring him to be substance-free and to learn how to live in service to others. GreenShare is important in getting people new possessions, says Thomas. But the thing that makes them such a value is the way they can make someone who was broken and ashamed feel whole and proud. This article was edited for Time. Next up, leading the way. Meet Dr. Scott Rawls, Wake Tech's new president, by Alina Evan. "Just call me Scott," says Wake Tech's new president. Beginning May 1st, Dr. Scott Rawls will helm the largest community college in North Carolina, an institution that serves 74,000 students and contributes an estimated $3 billion to the local economy. He succeeds longtime president Dr. Stephen Scott, who retired this spring, a man whose shoes I'll never fill, but on whose shoulders I hope to stand, says Rawls. A native of North Carolina, Rawls' life has spanned the state. He was born in Charlotte, spent his formative years in Waynesville, and graduated from UNC Chapel Hill. He spent many years working in state government before serving as president of Craven Community College, and then of the North Carolina Community College System. "I may be one of the few people who's been to all 100 counties in the state," he says. For the last decade, he's worked nearby, helming the Northern Virginia Community College system outside of Washington, D.C. But his heart has been in Raleigh, where his wife and four children live. Finally, this weekly commute down I-95 will come to an end as Rawls returns to the city he calls home. The morning of our interview, we joined the interim dean of health sciences, Barbara Coles, for a tour of the Perry Health Sciences campus, which offers 15 areas of study to train for the region's growing healthcare needs. Inside the new medical lab technology space, scrubs-clad students peeked into microscopes, leaned over x-rays, and tended to a code red mannequin patient in an emergency room simulation. Dr. Rawls hopped into the driver's side of the teaching ambulance, but resisted sounding the siren. As our tour concluded, Rawls exclaimed, "This is my favorite campus. then admitted he says this, only half in jest, at every one of the Wake Tech campuses he visits. As we walked, Rawls offered an outstretched hand to students and faculty alike. Community college hallways are the most inspiring places, he says. This is where you encounter heroes. As a former teacher himself, he taught statistics while at Craven County, rare for an administrator. He has a particular respect for the profession. He asks students one question over and over. What should never change at Wake Tech? And often gets the same answer, the people. Here, students say, the faculty and staff are supportive and focused on community building and inclusivity. Rawls assures them that he wants to open his tenure not as a force for change, but as a thoughtful listener. Wake Tech's Board of Trustees Chair, Tom Looney, said that Rawls stood out for his knowledge of the region and its economic landscape and workforce training needs, plus his ability to work with elected officials on both sides of the aisle. It was clear to the search committee that Scott Rawls was the right person to address the accelerating changes technology is making on all workforce disciplines, says Looney. His appointment will ensure Wake County has a workforce that will support continued economic expansion while delivering diversity and providing economic mobility to our students. Rawls understands the nuances of higher education, especially as it relates to first-generation college students, adult learners, second-career students, and ones with diverse learning needs. At Northern Virginia, the nation's second-largest community college, Rawls created a new information and technology division and oversaw the construction of three new advanced training facilities. This experience aligns with upcoming projects at Wake Tech, thanks to the $349 million bond Wake County voters approved last year. It will fund a high-tech, innovative training facility for first responders, as well as new buildings for health sciences, automotive and collision repair, and other classrooms and labs. Rawls is keen on the idea of new-collar workers who blend traditional and technical education rather than follow a college-to-career path. Wake Tech has an influx of adult learners who are changing careers and learning new skills. Coupled with students who are concurrently learning technical trades and taking traditional core classes. One of Rawls' areas of interest is expanding the early college high schools, where graduates complete their schooling with an associate's degree and are ready to enter the workforce or continue on with higher education. Throughout his career, Rawls had focused on issues around college financing and customized workforce training programs to ensure that students graduate with gainful employment and little to no debt. Currently, about one quarter of Wake County high school graduates pass through the doors of one of Wake Tech's six campuses, and a 2018 bond referendum will allow the school to improve infrastructure, expand and serve an additional 5,000 students by funding new classrooms, parking decks, and buildings on five campuses. Already, Wake Tech's culture sparks curiosity, challenges students, fosters collaboration, and values diversity, all aligning with Rawls' sensibilities. Wake Tech is already a purveyor of hope, an engine of opportunity, and a pathway to jobs, says Rawls. My number one goal as the new president is to do nothing to mess that up. This article was edited for Time. And from Jason Fry, Local Pearl, a seafood wholesaler opens its first restaurant inside Transfer Company Food Hall. On the wall, a school of mullet swims toward the Carolina coast, the silhouette of barrier islands and the undulating line of mainland stark against the aqua sea. Where I'm standing would be just be beyond the western edge of the map, in the newly opened Locals Oyster Bar in Raleigh's Transfer Company Food Hall, which has slowly been rolling out new vendors. And I'm ready for seafood. Standing in line to order, I'm tempted by the classic fare flying out of the kitchen. Shrimp po' boys, fish and chips, ceviche, but it's the constant motion of the shuckers that has me mesmerized. Working in near silence, they grab shell after shell. In less time than it'll take to read this sentence, they'll study one for the briefest of moments, insert the tip of a shucking knife into the hinge, twist a wrist, and drop a perfectly shucked oyster onto a bed of pebbled ice. Locals Oyster Bar is the first foray into restaurants from the lauded fish wholesaler Local Seafood, which will continue that part of its business as usual, including selling its oysters to some of the area's finest restaurants and keeping up its fish market locations at farmers markets. The Local Seafood team partnered with Person Street Bar to launch this new outpost with a full menu of wine, cocktails, and local craft beer to go with that mouth-watering slate of seafood, plus a fish counter with whole fish, primal cuts, and prepared food. This new venture turned out to be a natural extension of what they were doing. When we got involved with the transfer project, we started with the fish market, then added an oyster bar, then it just got bigger and bigger, says marketing manager Sarah Gray Smith. As it evolved, the feel of the space coalesced. We wanted a spot that would channel the authentic, salty coast, says Smith. This is meant to be a spot to kick back, relax, and hang out. An adjacent dining room will also be opening with an entirely different look, feel, and menu. It's a great outpost for local seafood, says Brian Habib, general manager of Locals Oyster Bar. We hope the fish counter will inspire customers to pick up some fresh fish, go home, and make something delicious. Habib feels that with seafood this fresh coming through the market and the kitchen, it would be a natural fit. Working with more than 24 oyster farms, fishmongers, and fishermen along the coast, Locals Oyster Bar offers the sort of outstanding seafood that gives Eric Montaigne, the executive chef, culinary goosebumps. I grew up in Miami and spent a lot of time fishing in the Keys, and I couldn't be happier with our selection of fish, he says. The chef and his team are constantly experimenting and improvising, both as a way to reduce waste and to keep the menu fresh. Even the Botarga Green Goddess dressing that dresses the wedge salad originated as a way to reduce waste. We use a bunch of fresh herbs and are constantly producing stems, so we modified our ranch recipe to include them, says Montaigne. Already, some of their more inventive offerings, including oyster poutine, fries smothered in oyster gravy and fried oysters, and Botarga fries, topped with shaved salt curd roe, are finding a welcome home in Transfer Company. Alongside the simpler fare, like raw oysters and clams, the near-perfect shrimp roll, and specials like a roasted fish, they've put together the perfect mix of ocean-born eats to pick over on a date or with a table full of friends. And we're happy to partake in the bounty. You can visit localsoysterbar.com for more information and hours. This article was edited for Time. Next is True Beauty. Locally made skincare line keeps it clean by Catherine Poole. Julie Hafer has always been serious about skincare. As a child, she would ride her bike to the drugstore at Cameron Village and scour the beauty aisles for the latest lotions and potions. In middle school, she saved her allowance for trips to the makeup counter at Crabtree Valley Mall. "Are you here to play?" she remembers a sales associate asking. "No," she replied, "I'm here to buy." Her obsession with beauty products continued through college, where she worked on a license in cosmetology while earning a degree in French from UNC Chapel Hill. During that time, she helped a steady stream of friends with skincare and makeup, but the one person she couldn't help was herself. Her skin was perpetually irritated, and it seemed that the more she spent on high-end products, the worse it became. "I didn't want to leave the house because I hated my face so much," says Hafer. Finally, through research and consumer reviews, she realized that her skin was sensitive to the fragrances and harsh additives in the brands she was using. It turned out expensive did not mean better. She felt duped. "That sense of betrayal is really what made me want to go into this business, because I wanted to do things differently," she says. Hafer launched the business Beauty Ethics in 2002, quickly growing from a rented booth at a salon in Five Points to a studio in Cameron Village. She also grew a loyal base of clients by offering aesthetic services that used affordable, fragrance-free, non-irritating skincare products from Paula's Choice. She headed down to a science, but realized that many of her clients had a hard time sticking to the multi-product beauty routines she prescribed, and that they, like her younger self, were still enticed by the allure of luxury lines. That dichotomy, that they knew what was good for their skin but wouldn't do it, frustrated her and fascinated her. So in 2011, Hafer returned to school to get a master's in psychology from North Carolina State University. As she learned what motivated human behavior in class, she realized that she could use that knowledge to create her own line of pure, easy-to-use, and customizable beauty products. "I just wanted people to love their skin." In 2012, Hafer teamed up with a chemist to formulate dye and fragrance-free products that are made with the most pure active ingredients she could find. She formed focus groups for testing and surveyed clients to learn what they wanted in a product. She selected a logo that was clean and gender-neutral to appeal to both men and women, and gave the products easy-to-remember names. The products are sold in luxe glass bottles, which not only look beautiful on the bathroom counter, but are also eco-friendly. The line of skincare and makeup is made in-house at her studio off Whittaker Mill Road, where she moved the business in 2018. Her products like Glycolic Glow, Spot Solver, Pore Perfector, and Smoothing Solution are made in small batches, hand-poured and labeled by a small group of friends and clients that work with her. Hafer keeps her prices reasonable and allows products to be returned for a full refund and glass bottles to be refilled. The goal? Base everything on science and be mindful of the environment. Make sure people aren't wasting their money if they're not getting the results they desire, she says. That's Beauty Ethics. You can visit beautyethics.com for more information. Now we'll go behind the scenes at a local materials recycling facility with Waste Not by I'm Monique Clark. Here in the Triangle, it's very easy to recycle. You open that big blue bin, toss in a plastic water bottle or soup can, and walk away feeling virtuous. But what happens after you roll your bin to the curb? Where does it go, and how does it get bundled back into the raw material that manufacturers can use to make new goods? Walter sets out to investigate. We connected with Mel Gillis, Education and Outreach Specialist for the North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality, who arranged a tour of one of our local material recovery facilities, or MRFs. This is the spot where all the contents of your single-stream recycling bin, a.k.a. your mixed-together plastics, glass, metal cans, and paper, go to be sorted and baled before they're sold to manufacturers as raw material. On the first approach, a giant active warehouse buzzing with big rigs and seagulls. Inside, mounds of materials, neon green-clad staffers, and a Rube Goldberg of machines that sort the goods. Ramps, magnets, blowers, and spinners move the material through one conveyor belt after another to drill down into categories: cardboard, paper, clear plastic versus colored plastic, aluminum, and more. Then press like materials into giant cubes called bales. Along the way, the machines get an assist from human hands, a necessary extra step to weed out the items that we, whether as wishful recyclers or just plain lazy ones, toss in that can't be recovered here. Some items, like steel, electronics, textiles, can still be recycled through local convenience centers. If those get mixed in, the bales get contaminated. Too much contamination, and no one will buy them. Among the items they find and eject: garden hoses, small appliances, wire hangers, food, dead animals, clamshells, and gobs of plastic bags. The dedicated staff, many of whom have been there for a decade or more, truly feel like they're making a difference in the community. And if there's one message that they want you to take away, it's this: when in doubt, throw it out. In our April calendar, the North Carolina Master Chorale presents Rachmaninoff's Vespers, April 27th, at the Holy Name of Jesus Cathedral. Chant-based melodies are woven into this a cappella choral composition. The cathedral will provide a fitting backdrop for this inspired performance. The evening starts at 8 p.m. Tickets start at $7.50. Visit ncmasterchoral.org for more information. We've run out of time for today's episode of Walter Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Maureen McDonald for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.